Chapter 31.
Narshada? Havoc asks, nose wrinkling. What's a Narshada besides huts and crime? A very specific kind of crime, I'm assuming, since we're not telling anyone we're going there, Colt retorts, and jerks his head at Blitz without looking away from the wiring under his hands. Get those stashed and then duck down to the engine room. You know where the shielding corner is? We've been on secret missions before, Vod, Blitz says, thumping him in the side of the helmet as he passes. Keep your comma on. We'll get out of sight. Colt grunts, unimpressed. You've been on missions with General Yoda. Not like this. He's not sure what, precisely, General T is planning to do. And even with the jammer, she hasn't wanted to say. But no matter what, he thinks it's safe to say she's planning something big. You've been on 5 missions with General T, and 2 of those were to Coruscant. Blitz tucks Havoc's modified sniper rifle back behind one of Shock's robes in the ship's tiny closet. Don't act like you're an expert. More expert than either of us, Havoc points out, and drops a crate of rations by the bulkhead. Pauses, running his fingers over the sleek sweep of the wall, and says, I think I've figured out why you volunteer for all the escort missions, Vod. You always did like flying. You think that's why? Blitz scoffs, but he mostly sounds amused. Not quite, I'm guessing. Right, Colt? Nejoha! Colt snaps, not about to endure any teasing from Blitz of all people. Havoc rolls his eyes at both of them, then says, No one's gonna ask why a Jedi cruiser has a smuggler's hold? A high-tech smuggler's hold, Blitz clarifies, shaking his head. General Yoda said it was for getting valuable people out of dangerous systems. What's it matter why they stuck it in there? It's there, and we can use it. Colt straightens, still not entirely happy with the weapon system, but willing to leave them for now. He'll talk to Shock about overhauling the system later. You registered for leave? Of course, Havoc confirms, before Blitz can say something sharp. No one's going to have a reason to look for us unless there's an attack. And if there is, we'll have bigger things to worry about, Blitz finishes, and catches Havoc by the collar. Come on, let's go hide before the long necks think to scan the ship pre-takeoff. You know, taking leave together is going to start a hell of a lot of rumors about us, Havoc jokes, and Blitz promptly bounces him off the edge of a doorway. Ow! Give me your osik! Suck it up, Blitz retorts, dragging him out of sight. Colt rolls his eyes at both of them, but turns when the doors to the facility open in a wash of golden light. Colt makes her way through the heavy rain, not rushing, with her hands folded in the sleeves of her robe. It takes Colt a moment to make out her expression in the darkness, but by the time she's at the base of the ramp, any thoughts he might have had of her regretting this mission are gone. She looks grim, settled in it, and she inclines her head to Colt without pause. General, Colt says, coming to attention. Tup's all set? Shock inclines her head, then shakes the water off her montrals. He'll have surgery in an hour, she says. Egan and Dogma are staying with him, and his recovery can be done in my rooms. That's one weight off Colt's mind, at least. He hadn't really thought the kid would go through with it, but maybe he underestimated him a bit. Underestimated his devotion to Shock, too. Good, he says. We're prepped and ready whenever you are, General. I've got the all-clear from the air traffic systems, too. This sector's clear.
Very good, Commander. Please register our course for Coruscant.
Shock sweeps past him, but her hand brushes his as she moves. Just enough for Colt to feel it through his gloves. Of course, sir. Right away. Colt follows her up toward the cockpit, then takes the pilot seat and pulls his helmet off, leaning forward to lay the course. He lets the Kaminoan systems check his calculations, then gets the confirmation and starts the engines. As they lift off, Shock takes the other seat, folding her hands in her lap, and closes her eyes, breathes out, and her face slips into the placid lines that mean she's actually somewhere far away. Colt doesn't comment. He gets them out of the atmosphere, out of range of the Kaminoan systems, and quickly wipes the hyperspace coordinates and inputs new ones. Nar Shaddaa is along enough hyperspace lanes that getting there is easy, even from a backwater planet like Kamino. It's an easy jump to hyperspace, and as soon as the stars blur past them, Shock lets out a slow breath and lifts her head. "No one seems to have noticed anything," she says. "Of the minds on watch, no one considered us for more than a few moments." "Council summons makes a good excuse," Colt says, double-checks the systems and leans back, letting the ship take care of itself. It's top of the line. Practically all he has to do is point it in the right direction. "They do." Shock's smile is faintly crooked. "With any luck, Agen's presence will keep anyone from needing me directly, and checking with the council. I don't plan to share news of my intentions, even with them." "Clever," Colt thinks. "Trust, but not recklessly. That's how he would prefer everyone did everything." "That secret?" he asks, raising a brow at her. Shock hums, tilting her head. "There are things that even most of the other council members are not aware of, Agen included." "And this has something to do with us heading for Nar Shaddaa?" Havoc asks, ducking through the doorway well ahead of Blitz. Blitz is looking put out, so Havoc probably got his revenge when they were hiding their biosigns. But he steps up behind Colt's chair anyway. Doesn't do more than jostle Havoc with an elbow as he does. "Everything to do with why," Shock allows, though she casts them a quick smile. "There was recently a traitor found among the ranks of the Jedi Order. In fact, Agen was just returning from attempting to apprehend him when he was dispatched to Kamino." "A traitor?" Colt frowns, unsettled by the idea, even though he knows that people like Dooku used to be Jedi themselves. "And you're going to look for them?" he asks warily. Not about to yell at a Jedi for idiocy, but maybe he's a little closer to it than he would have thought 5 minutes ago. "No," Shock says calmly, "because I know exactly where to find him, and Quinlan will be able to tell me where to find Dooku." For a moment, Colt can't even speak, stunned silent. He stares at Shock, and she watches him in return, expression serene. The light of hyperspace reflecting in her eyes in a dizzying rush. Like this is logical, like this isn't going to get her killed. Colt's heart is in his throat. He wants to shake her, maybe yell now, or... Shock leans forward, laying a hand over Colt's. "Peace, Colt," she says softly. "I have faced Grievous before and won, and I know Dooku. I know his capabilities. He will underestimate me. And even beyond that, I have you and your brothers."
"And even if he's checking the manifests, he won't know we're with you," Havoc says and crosses his arms over his chest, looking pleased. "It should work, Colt."
"It will work, except for the fact that they're hunting down Dooku." Colt grimaces, rubbing a hand over his face, but... Dooku knows about the chips, and he's part of all of this. If they can take him out, that's one of the biggest players out of the game, for good. And it might end the war well ahead of what's expected. It gets the Jedi out of a good amount of danger, too. "All right," he says grimly. "We're not going in there without at least 3 plans, though, and at least 2 backups for each of those." Shock chuckles, raising a hand to hide her smile.
"Commander," she says warmly, "Jedi don't plan. We listen to the will of the Force and move accordingly."
There's a moment of silence as Colt stares at her, incredulous. every last word having vanished from his brain. With a snort, Blitz leans forward and claps him on the shoulder.
Good luck, Vod, he says. Koyasyi.
Colt thinks he can be forgiven for punching him in the shoulder with all the force of his frustration behind it. After all, he's not about to punch Shock, even if that statement probably at least somewhat deserves it.
Jetty, he thinks.
But Shock is smiling and... they're going after Dooku. Colt shakes his head and says, you Jedi are crazy. Far from being offended, Shock just looks amused. Perhaps, she allows, and turns her head, the Akul tooth headdress catching the starlight. Dooku won't be expecting this, however, and I find myself out of patience with his plotting, Colt. Well, there's not really any arguing with that. And, at the very least, the three of them aren't going to be a danger to Shock, even if Dooku tries to activate the chips. Colt sighs, running a hand over his hair, and thinks of her quiet offer on the bridge. Thinks of after, when he rarely lets himself, and... think you'd want a guard?
No, but I think I would do far better with a partner.
Me too, General, he says. But he's dangerous.
Yes,
Shock agrees, soft. Her eyes are still fixed out the viewscreen, on the passing streak of stars.
Incredibly dangerous. And he serves a more dangerous master. But the only way to deal with a tumor is to cut it out. And I will start with the disease that is in front of me and work from there.
Even if it's not the kind of plan Colt would prefer, he supposes it's good enough for now. They'll figure it out. Hopefully. This, Anakin thinks grimly, would be a really good time to have paid attention to Obi-Wan's lessons about cloaking himself in the Force. There are footsteps, multiple sets, passing right beyond the corner. Voices in a low murmur, and Anakin curls a hand around Kix's arm, keeps his other over Thorn's mouth as he twitches and stirs. It's tempting to use a Force suggestion to send him back to sleep, to make sure they won't be found, but... hells, he's had that done to him so many times that Anakin would rather risk getting caught than try it again. Kix turns his head, and even through the helmet, Anakin can see the way he checks on Reese. The worry as he reaches for Thorn, gets a hand on his shoulder.
Easy, Vod, he breathes,
and Thorn's eyes snap open. At the same moment, a man says,
Sidious left his guards at home this time, it seems.
Every muscle in Thorn's body goes tight, and he jerks. Quickly, Anakin lets go of Kix, wraps both arms around Thorn instead to hold him still, and hisses a wordless warning as he pins him.
Easy,
he mutters. And Thorn? Thorn is shaking. There's nothing but terror in his eyes. Deep, horrified confusion. And Anakin thinks about the holes in his mind and feels sick.
Easy, Thorn,
he murmurs, softer, and gentles his grip. Jerky, short, Thorn nods. And Anakin drops the hand over his mouth, but doesn't let go of him entirely. Thorn's hand comes up, clutching at his robes. And Anakin can't help but think of how he did that years ago to Obi-Wan in the aftermath of his worst nightmares. It's been a long time since he's gone to Obi-Wan about them, but... once, Obi-Wan was the greatest comfort a scared little boy could have hoped for.
Not... all of them,
a woman says, coldly amused.
More puppets.
It's what they were made for, the first man's voice again. But it goes quiet a moment later. The woman is the one who says,
Your lord called for us, and we came. Don't keep us waiting. This way.
Fox's voice, flat, uninflected.
Lord Sidious is prepared for your arrival.
I'm sure he is, the woman drawls. Lord Jedgar.
Leave them, Mareely. Sidious won't take kindly to you damaging his pets. There's a low, grinding hiss that puts the hairs on the back of Anakin's neck up. He holds his breath, listening to the scrape of scales on stone. Steps turn, heading back towards the square a few paces. And Jedgar says, if Sidious wants to leave himself undefended, I won't protest. But the city is restless tonight. My hissis will remain here. Not a name, Anakin recognizes, and he curses silently, eyeing the next window above them as an alternate route back into the Citadel. It's too high for him to take the troopers with him, though, and he's not about to leave them behind.
Of course, sir.
Fox's voice again, and Anakin flickers a glance at the square, considering. But before he can move, there are steps again, fading, passing into the building, and in their wake, a heavy door slams shut. Slowly, carefully, Anakin breathes out. The sound of scales doesn't come again, but he's still careful when he lets go of Thorn and sits up.
You okay, Thorn? He asks quietly.
Thorn looks from him to Kix to Reese, still unconscious, and the confusion hasn't abated at all.
General Skywalker, he asks, where are we? The Senate, we...
A Sith planet, Anakin answers. Somewhere in the Astron sector. Someone was controlling you. Thorn swallows, but when Anakin rests a hand on his shoulder, he leans into it.
I don't remember anything, he says, bewildered.
Kix leans forward, just enough to glance around the corner, and then sinks back quickly, flattening himself to the wall in a way that means he just saw something very unpleasant. With a flicker of grim resignation rising, Anakin glances at him, and even through the helmet, he can see Kix's grimace.
Lizards,
Kix says, almost soundless. At least 6 of them, 3 meters long without the meter of tail, and about 1.5 meters tall. Big, carking claws, sir.
Great, Anakin thinks with a sinking feeling. That must be what a hissus is. And knowing his luck, it's probably venomous, too.
That was Fox, wasn't it? Thorn asks, and he slides away from Anakin as quietly as he can. But Anakin catches him before he can go far. Maybe it's the memory of Obi-Wan soothing his nightmares or sitting up beside his bed on bad nights. But Anakin lets Thorn settle against the wall between him and Kix, one hand still on his shoulder. It could be his imagination, but he thinks Thorn leans into the contact. Thinks he can feel the trembles lightening, even if they don't disappear.
Yeah, Anakin says softly.
Thier's here too, and probably Jack. We don't know about anyone else.
Thorn swallows, nods. Gentle, Kix taps a knuckle against the lightning bolt tattoos that arc down his cheek, and says, help me hold Reese while the general wakes him up. I think the stun is wearing off. Thorn's expression twists, but he nods, rolling up onto one knee to grab Reese's left arm. Kix takes the right, then nods to Anakin and says, whenever you're ready, sir. Anakin hesitates, caught, swallows hard, looking down at Reese, and his hands curl into fists as he remembers that glimpse of Palpatine's office, Palpatine's smile, welcoming, grandfatherly, exactly the same as the one he gives to Anakin. Eerie to see it, and then feel the grab of power that took Thorn's mind and wiped everything else away. He doesn't want to feel it again, doesn't want to know, because there's a Sith Lord controlling the war, there's a Sith Lord taking power, but it can't be someone Anakin knows. It can't be someone he cares about.
This whole karking war has been going on for so long, though, and it's so dangerous, and he can't even count the number of times Padme and Obi-Wan have both almost died. If Palpatine is responsible for that, if he's really the Sith Lord, this would be so much easier to face if Windu was here. He's the head of the council. He could choose what to do, and Anakin could just follow his orders. He doesn't want to have to decide what's happening here for himself, but Reese stirs and Anakin reaches out automatically, grips his jaw, tips forward into his mind. It's not nearly as bad as Thorne's. Somehow, though, that makes the dark, gaping tears where he's lost time more obvious. The black threads that have stitched orders into his being even more gruesome. Anakin grits his teeth, thinking of his mother, of the explosive chip inside her head that kept her from escaping. It isn't the same thing, not quite, but there are shades of it he can't push down. He left his mother on Tatooine. He left her there and she died. Leaving the guards here isn't an option. Reese comes back to awareness, jerking and gasping, Anakin's hand over his mouth. He wrenches upright, topples forward, and Kix rushes to steady him as he gags and chokes, unable to help himself. Anakin moves too, resting a hand on his armored back and tries not to drown in the waves of horror and desperation rising from him, reaches for Reese's mind. A body, a Twi'lek man who saw them boarding, who asked for identification and credentials, and Reese shot him. Reese shot him and Jack dumped his body over the side of the platform, and Palpatine had walked past without even glancing at them. "It wasn't you," Anakin says, as loud as he dares. "It wasn't you, Reese." Reese chokes out a sound that might be a laugh, burying his face in his hands. "Carking hells, it sure felt like my finger on the trigger, General." "It wasn't," Anakin insists, and there's anger curling in his stomach, kindling, flaring. He's furious, and if Palpatine did this, if this really is him and not someone framing him in a stupidly complicated scheme, Anakin will, he'll have to do something. Reese doesn't deserve this. Neither does Thorne. Neither did whatever official they were ordered to kill just because they'd seen the wrong thing. "It was his finger on the trigger," Anakin says, and means it. Thinks of yellow eyes and the blankness of Thorne's memories, and says, "He used you, Reese. It wasn't your fault." When Reese doesn't answer, Anakin takes a breath. He tugs the trooper up, and the sight of his pale, twisted expression turns sharp and rough in Anakin's chest. It seems, for a moment, like Anakin can look at him and see the dark thread still holding his mind in a certain pattern, pinning his thoughts to strange orders. Anakin isn't Mandalorian, but he's lived side by side with Rex and all of Torrent Company for months now. It's as automatic as breathing to lean in, to rest his forehead against Reese's. And Reese makes a soft, pained sound, closing his eyes. "None of you are at fault here," Anakin says, a dare to disagree with him. "We're gonna get you out of here, all of you, all right? So just keep moving, Reese." "Yes, sir," Reese says, but it's steadier than it was a moment ago, firmer. When Anakin pulls back, Reese nods, and he follows Anakin up to his feet. Anakin offers Thorne a hand, and the commander takes it, slightly wobbly, but not enough that Anakin thinks he's going to fall over his own feet as soon as they start to move. Rising as well, Kix brings his blaster around, then asks, "Take out the lizard, sir?" It's automatic to want to say yes. Anakin opens his mouth to do just that, then pauses, thinks of the voices, and maybe they're not Sith themselves, but they seem more than willing to follow the Sith Lord, and that makes them dangerous enough. There are at least three enemies in the Citadel then, including Dooku and Maul's master, And Anakin knows he's good, but those odds suck shebs. Given how dangerous Ventress alone is, he might not even risk it if he had all of Torrent Company and Obi-Wan as backup. With three clone troopers, skilled but baseline human, two of whom have had the Sith Lord in their heads, digging pathways for himself to use them like puppets, and having to prioritize rescuing at least three other guards? Yeah, Anakin isn't that suicidal. There were lower floors, he says to Kix, a flicker of thought coalescing into an idea. We scouted the edges of them. There must be basement entrances somewhere, right? For supplies or whatever. Even Sith Lords from 1,000 years ago have to eat. So where are the kitchens? Somewhere we can break into more easily, I'm sure, Kix says with a trace of humor. Thorne says, looking between them. I think I might know. Works for me. Let's get moving, Anakin says, and pushes Thorne's helmet into his hands. It's not quite a plan, but it's close enough to one that even Obi-Wan couldn't complain much. And that's good enough for Anakin. Cody isn't entirely sure what he expected, but it's certainly not this. He jerks to a sharp halt around the corner, one hand snapping up to grab Mace's arm as he follows. It takes half a second to register the scene. The panic of Shmi being a Sith plant is still at the forefront. The "she's a danger" beating a tattoo against the inside of his skull, regardless of what Mace says about her presence being light, but Fives is on the ground, groaning. Shmi has his blaster up and aimed, but not at him or at them. It's pointed towards a door in a wall that stands open, dark and cobwebbed. On the ground between her and the door, scorched and still, is the body of a Vornskar that looks like it was shot mid-leap. Shmi? Mace asks, calm, and steps around Cody. He doesn't have his lightsaber in hand, and he looks perfectly unruffled as he crouches down next to Fives, carefully pulling him up to sit. Fives' expression is screwed up, dazed and pained in equal measure, and he clutches his head without speaking. It's strange enough to make Cody give him a careful look as he approaches, one hand close enough to the warblade to draw it if he needs it. The creature, Shmi says, and takes a breath, lowering the weapon slightly. Her eyes flicker from the doorway to them and back again. It came out, and Fives thought it was something else. Someone, Fives mutters, and curls forward, pressing his hands against his forehead. It looked, I thought it was heavy, and if Anakin's mom came back from the dead, I thought, understandable. Cody breathes out, lets the dizzying rush of adrenaline retreat slightly. Shiny, he says warningly, even as he claps Fives on the shoulder. If you got taken out with your own blaster, I think I need to have some words with Rex about how he's training you. Captain Rex is fine, Fives mutters, rubbing what looks like a growing knot on his skull. She wouldn't have gotten it if I'd been paying attention. And I'm not a shiny anymore. Then you should have been paying more attention, Cody tells him, and effervescent, like a tide beneath his own relief, he can feel Mace's amusement. It's not his own. It's a step removed, and he knows it isn't his, but he can still feel it. It's weird. You're lucky Shmi is a good shot, Mace says dryly, sitting back. He rises smoothly and tells Shmi, Vornskars are very dangerous. It's good you killed that one at a distance. Shmi smiles crookedly, but gladly passes the blaster back to Mace. It's smaller than a womp rat, she says, but I figured anything with teeth like that should likely stay at a distance. A good instinct. Mace gives Fives the blaster back, then offers him a hand. Taking it, Fives lets Mace pull him to his feet with a grimace, then lifts his head, blinks for a moment at the Vornskar, and then at the door, and asks in an odd voice, Was that door here on our way down? Startled, Shmi glances at it, then frowns.
I'm not sure, she says slowly, but I think it looks familiar.
Light, warm, Mace's hand settles on Cody's arm like he's trying to soothe the spike of worry that rises.
Where you woke up, perhaps? Mace asks steadily,
and Shmi hesitates.
It was a room, she says, with blood on the floor and golden lights, but they were unsettling. I don't remember what things looked like when I ran.
She takes a step forward, putting a hand on the edge of the doorframe, and Cody tenses. Torches kindle, lighting the dark hallway that curves upwards. Uneasily, Cody glances at Mace, who's frowning faintly.
It looks like an invitation, Mace says after a moment.
It looks like a trap, Cody says frankly, but he doesn't stop Mace when he steps forward. Echoing through Mace, one step removed from his own emotions, he can feel Mace's curiosity, the wariness, the strange pull to investigate that's one note off normal.
Mace? This tunnel leads up more sharply than the main one, Mace offers. And there are stairs.
Cody opens his mouth to ask if he's just seeing things, then remembers with a flash of breathless heat why he isn't. He stops short, and Mace glances back over his shoulder with a flicker of amusement. It's enough to make Cody's skin heat, but he determinedly controls the reaction and follows.
You think we should take a look? He asks, and almost reaches for Mace's hand automatically, but
it's not necessary. Not anymore. Even so, Mace turns his hand, letting their fingers brush. He doesn't glance at Cody, but Cody can still feel that most of Mace's attention is turned on him, aware in a way that prickles across Cody's skin, like the first press of their mouths together.
I think, Mace says quietly, that someone resurrected Anakin's mother, and finding out both who and why is in our best interest.
That, Cody's willing to admit, is a good point. Even if they head to the surface right now, meet with Anakin, and get off this planet, there's no way Anakin would just leave his mother alone here, which means taking her with them. And if she's dangerous, that could end in even more disaster.
I'm convinced, he says dryly, and Mace snorts.
His humor ebbs around Cody like a tide for an instant before he marshals it, and Cody feels a flicker of pleasure that's similar to what he normally gets when he makes Rex laugh, but bigger, brighter. He just kisses Mace on the mouth. It shouldn't feel brave to skim his knuckles over the back of Mace's hand. One careful brush that makes something shiver through his mind. It's not his own reaction either, and just knowing that. Well, Cody's only human. His thoughts want to dive straight down into the gutter, but he marshals them with an effort of supreme will and asks,
Ladies first, she impressed me with her blaster skills.
Behind him, Fives squawks in indignation, and Mace smiles, just faintly. Shmi, when Cody glances back, looks quietly pleased, but she pats Fives on the arm sympathetically, and Cody definitely catches a murmured apology for hitting him.
You're the one with a Sith warblade,
Mace points out. He glances back and says,
Fives, there's a creature feeding us illusions. Ask us if you see anything alarming.
I can do that, Fives says, unhappily resigned. More Sith tricks?
Indirectly, Mace allows,
and steps forward up the steep path, towards the staircase. There's a golden light spilling down it, staining the floor like burn scars, and Cody takes a deep breath before he follows.
Yeah, this is gonna go perfectly.